Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A new anthology called The Peanuts Papers, writers and cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy and the Gang, and the meaning of life, celebrates and investigates the iconic work of Charles Schulz and its relevance in our culture at large. 33 authors and artists, including somebody you know, Ira Glass, Ann Patchett, George Saunders, and my guests, Lisa Birnbach and David Camp. Hi.
Hi.
Each pay tribute to Peanuts and reveal lessons learned from the four-frame cartoon strip. The anthology, edited by Andrew Blauner. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
And published by Library of America, features essays, memoirs, poems, and two original comic strips. So, Andrew, when you first, what was the original goal for the anthology, and then how did it change over time?
Well, the word anthology itself comes from the Latin word that means bouquet, and I've loved Peanuts since I was a kid, but in 1999 I got to meet Charles Schulz and spend some time with him and become sort of a correspondent with him in the last year of his life, and that kind of solidified things. It took 20 years for it to happen, but that was sort of the origin story.
What is something about Charles Schulz that stays with you? Something about the man, something about the way he worked?
Oh, his insecurity, his humility, his melancholy, and so many things, which is part of what makes this this project sort of paradoxically sort of simple in some ways and very complicated, and draws the comparisons to Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But he was a very kind and gentle person who never thought he was as good or as big as any of the rest of us did. He always said, well, if someone paid him a compliment, he'd sometimes say, well, but I'm not Andrew Wyeth.
Oh my goodness. In terms of the history of Peanuts and Charles Schulz, at what point did it changed from a form of entertainment to really being a cultural touchstone?
I think the so-called historians who study this stuff and really put it in context cite when Snoopy got up on two legs, when he stopped being a dog who crawls around on all fours, that kind of, some people would say for worse, but mm-hmm. otherwise for better, or just for that elevated, that at least changed the strip, that sort of pointed to as the seminal moment. And for other people, it was the TV specials that were either their gateway or mm-hmm. that sort of put it on the map for them, and that led them to the strip as opposed to the other way around.
David, how about for you? What was your first exposure?
My first exposure was simply reading it in the afternoon paper. And for you younger listeners, an afternoon paper was a broadsheet newspaper that would arrive when you came home from school that your parents would read at night, and it had this big comics page. But that stimulated a deep dive into the Schulz back catalog, because I was a 70s kid and he already had two decades worth of work. Mm-hmm. And so you'd go to the bookstore or the library and say, I'm going to read all of these strips. And then you learn about this whole universe and how it developed. And you learn about weird things like Charlie Brown going to Lucy for psychiatric help, which was, what right. is psychiatric help? That's how you learn about it, from Peanuts.
So for people who don't know, you are a writer and you're an editor at Vanity Fair. So I just take off your fan hat for a minute and put on your editor's hat and your writer's hat. What do you think is Charles Schulz's special skill?
His special skill is to promulgate these very controversial, difficult ideas. Andrew used the word melancholy, and make it go down easily. It's, people think of Peanuts as being kind of hallmarky and pat and sweet, and it's really complex and daring in that he took on the interiority of a child's life for better and for worse, and talked about the dark moods and the depression. And when you're reading this as a kid, you feel like, oh, I felt that before. Or even as an adult, you're saying, I remember what that felt like. I think that's why it connected on such a wide scale.
Lisa, how about for you? I mean, you're a great humor writer. And even in the melancholy, they're just really good laughs in Charles Schulz.
Charles Schulz was funny in a way that wasn't cool and was very cool. And to me, his greatness was in the ordinariness of it and how magnificent an ordinary day is. Even when somebody's picking on you at school, even when somebody's making fun of you, it's still kind of a great day, and you'll be back tomorrow, because there was something about the indomitability of his characters. Was he funny? Totally. Can I remember a single punchline? Never. I'm so sorry. I can't tell a joke at all. But,
you
read
blockhead.
It. Yes, exactly. Good grief. Well done. But I read it for the laughs. I mean, I definitely read it to feel less alone. And I read it when I wasn't invited to other people's houses to play.
If you go to my office right now on my computer monitor, there's a little tiny Buddha on one side and a little tiny Franklin. Mm.
Uh-huh.
Look, I mean, it meant so much to me because we're all about the same vintage to see a black cartoon character who was just their friend. And that's who Franklin was. And in your piece in the book, you really write about seeing yourself or mm-hmm. hoping to see yourself, which it's funny because the title of the chapter is Lucy Can't See.
Right.
Why can't Lucy see? Explain to people.
Okay. I got to play Lucy in the third grade at my little second tier girls' school here in New York City. And I could not. And my drama teacher said, you're not going to wear glasses. Now, I was the little nearsighted girl at my school and a total loser. And from the time she told me I couldn't wear my glasses to the performance, I was racked with fear that I would roll off the auditorium steps. And I couldn't see. I mean, once I took my glasses off, it was all vague. And she had let me be glasses-wearing Sancho Panza. She had let me be wearing glasses Butterfly. I didn't know why I couldn't be glasses-wearing Lucy, but I couldn't.
Because Lucy, there's about Lucy's strength. There was a certain part of that. I'm actually going to ask you to read a little bit of what you wrote about Lucy. If you can start with As One of Three. Maybe set that up for our listeners a little bit. This is Lisa Birnbach, by the way.
As one of three kids in my family, I was instructed not to be selfish. Selfishness was the worst thing I could imagine. If there were anything more despicable, I hadn't heard of it. I was the only girl in the family, so I had less sharing to do if you think about it. I tried not to think about myself too much. Lucy, on the other hand, enjoyed being self-centered. She was dramatic. She wanted Schroeder's love and respect and had no problem demanding it. She had confidence. She may not have had a guilty bone in her body as she grabbed Charlie Brown's football away from him just as his foot was about to kick it. She could be bad. She could be mean. Is that it? Or do you want me to?
You can keep going a little bit if you want. I'm enjoying this.
Okay. Lucy not only offered advice, she insisted on being paid for it. Lucy was a bossy know-it-all.
Did you get a sense, even as a young woman, that Lucy's feminism held something for you?
I just had total Lucy envy. If I could go around in my life and be that secure, that confident, that anything I had to say would stick, instead of being mocked, I would have been the happiest girl at the Lenox School instead of the most miserable.
So, Andrea, I mentioned Franklin. Lisa's talked about Lucy. Was Charles Schulz aware of his progressive nature? Was that part of what he wanted to accomplish?
I don't think so. I think he was sort of on record multiple times saying that anything that he had to say, he said through his characters and through the strip. I'm sure there are lots of publishers who would have loved to have published his memoir. He's a lifelong Republican, which is a big surprise to a lot of people, and he expressed some regret that he didn't vote for Kennedy in 1960. But David, it's funny you bring up Franklin. That's what drew me to David as a prospective contributor for this book, because he wrote a great piece about Franklin for the New York Times about a year or two.
Yeah, the 50th anniversary of Franklin's introduction to the strip. And that's a good example of Schulz being putatively non-political, but making this subtle choice to just introduce a second-tier, friend character, as you said, Allison, who just happens to be black, so there's not a big deal around it, but that is political. He just wouldn't come to terms with that.
Oh, and there was a lot of pushback from the syndicate at the time. It was 1968, and he introduced Franklin as in response to a letter from a school teacher.
Right.
He wasn't demagogic. He wasn't trying to pander to the masses, and yet the upshot of part of it all that I love so much is how it brings people together. We did an event last night at the Writers Museum in Chicago, and it was Chris Ware and Ivan Brunetti who are in the book, and they're both cartoonists. And it turns out they have dinner actually every Sunday night together. Lisa and David sort of were aware of each other, but Barack Obama, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton were all huge Peanuts fans. I'm just finding that it helps coalesce, that it brings people together. It's one of the last great unifiers I think we have in sort of popular culture, and has been for about 70 years.
I guess I found from reading the book that this very simple looking on the surface comic strip had a very powerful impact on kids of all ages and in different ways. And that's what moves me about the bouquet that Andrew has assembled.
Well, and it's at its apex, I think is the word that you used, David, in your piece. I think it was read by 350 million people in dozens of languages and dozens of countries.
Yeah, there's a word that I've come to hear more recently, that we used to have a monoculture, which means we all watch the same TV shows,
sure,
listen to the same music. And I think in the time of the monoculture, Schultz in his quiet way was as big as Walt Disney, as big as Elvis, as big as the Beatles. He was that pervasive and widely followed.
My guests are Andrew Blauner, David Camp, and Lisa Birnbach. We're talking about the new anthology, The Peanuts Papers. So, David, your essay is called The History of the 20th Century, Four Panels at a Time.
Yes.
How is this the history of the 20th century through Peanuts?
Well, he worked through the second half of pretty much on the dot, 1950 to 2000, I think, the second half of the 20th century. And he would always, Schultz this is, would always drop in some references either to current events or some proper nouns, like he'll mention Rachel Carson or Willie McCovey or
Twiggy,
Billie Jean King. And if you're reading this as a kid, and as I said, I got into this as a young kid, I don't know who these people are. And so I would ask my mom, who's Rachel Carson? And then my mom, who happened to be a research scientist, said, well, Rachel Carson was this great woman who was an ecologist. And so that's how I would come to learn, and many people would come to learn about people. Woodstock, I asked my brother, why is it funny that Snoopy's bird friend is named Woodstock? And he said, well, there was this rock concert, et cetera. But that was my first encounter, and I later became a journalist who writes about music much of the time. That was the first way I learned about Woodstock, the festival.
Andrew, as you approached people to be part of this, what was the common first reaction, or was there a common first reaction?
I mean, it's sort of a self-selecting group, or part of my goal with it. The last time I was here was for a book about Central Park, and the last anthology I did was about the Beatles, actually, which is comparable in some ways to Peanuts. But, you know, in some cases, there were people who were on record as being huge fans. Other people, I just loved the way they thought and wrote, and just hoped that there would be some aspect about the strip that they'd want to write about. I had some apprehension that everybody was going to want to write about Snoopy, or that there'd just be some sort of homogeneity in the pieces. So I was mindful of that as I was sort of doing the outreach to people. And fortunately, it's meant to be sort of a tapestry where you get different voices and different viewpoints from different types of writers and cartoonists alike.
Over the course of Peanuts' career and Charles Schulz's career, I'm curious how you felt about the commercialization of Peanuts, because you can find it on every T-shirt, tote bag. Did it have an impact on you, and did it have an impact on the project? I'm curious. What do you think,
Lisa? I never bought any ancillary products. I bought the anthologies. They were 50 cents, I think, the little mass market paperback versions, and it didn't take away from my appreciation of Charles Schulz's goodness and humor. So I had no, and I never watched the specials, but I did
like. What are you, a communist?
Yes, I am. I did love Vince Guaraldi's music.
Guaraldi, yeah.
Yeah, I love the music. I love the jazziness of it.
And there's a good essay in the book.
Yeah, Gerald Early has a great piece about it.
Yes, but I was not a consumer of other versions of Peanuts. Not at all. I mean, to me, it was like seeing Mickey or Minnie on a T-shirt. I get it. I don't want it.
Okay. How about for you?
I was totally into the specials. And in my essay, my piece, I actually write that I had a shrine to Charles Schulz in the corner of my bedroom. I took like an old picnic, wicker picnic hamper, put my baby blanket on top of it, and displayed my Peanuts books and assorted Peanuts-related paraphernalia that one could purchase at stationery stores.
And you're very careful about it. You note that, and that you took great care of it. Not the way a boy would like mangle things.
No, it was curated like a museum display, because that's how deeply I felt this man's work. And it was kind of nuts, but...
That was the common... Is, yeah. If you ask what was a common response, that was it. And two things quickly. One, the people who watched the TV specials first have articulated that it was to go back to the strip. You can't read the strip now without hearing the characters' voices. So if you come to the strip initially, there's more of a purity to it, too. In terms of merchandising, I mean, my almost five-year-old will now ask to watch the Peanuts app in the morning.
The app.
Yeah. I mean, there are
I wish
many.
You could all see Alice's face.
It's not singular. There are many, many apps. There's a new Snoopy float coming to the Thanksgiving Day parade. Apple TV just launched a new Snoopy in Space channel. And, Lisa, this might especially interest you, in the new year, there's a new production, a national tour of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which, by the way, is the most produced musical in American history, numbering over 40,000 productions.
Wow. And I saw the first one.
Yeah. If I may return to that monoculture idea, part of the reason that it still persists, Peanuts and popularity and these characters, is because despite our atomized media landscape, everything that Andrew mentioned is still a delivery system for Peanuts. So my kids, who are Generation Z, are just as fluent in these characters as we are.
Finally, was it always Charles Schulz's intention that the adults would be wah, 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 that they would not be heard?
Chris Ware could give you a chapter and verse about this, and he can also illustrate. He can show you the illustrations where there actually were some adults in the strip, which is, shocking to people. But otherwise, grown-ups, the only person whose parents ever appear in the strip are Snoopy's.
I didn't even know that.
You would be excellent at a trivia night. The name of the book is The Peanuts Papers, Writers and Cartoonists on Charlie Brown, Snoopy, and the Gang, and the Meaning of Life. Andrew Blauner, David Camp, and Lisa Birnbach, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Allison.
We're leaving on this election day with a little bit of Peanuts, just something a little special. Take a listen.
I want you to know I have enjoyed this campaign. You tell them! And it has been a pleasure to meet so many of you.
Yay! Yay!
I have appreciated your support. Therefore, I have a little surprise for you. And as a change of pace, rather than campaign talk, I decided to say a few words about the Great Pumpkin.
Ugh!
It's the best. This is all of it on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I'll meet you back here next time.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.